Hello, and welcome to the Inside Ivy's podcast for March the 18th, 2021. This is episode number 50. Our top stories today, Kia EV6 design is revealed ahead of its full debut. BMW i4 is revealed with 300 miles of range, and VW lays out its EV strategy on Power Day. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge with Tom Malogny. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from Out of Spec Studios. He also puts together stupidly terrific videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. Please subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. Now, if you like the podcast, please leave us a rating or maybe even a review on whichever platform you catch us on. That helps others discover us and maybe spread the word about EVs. Of course, if you're watching us on YouTube, we'd like a thumbs up there as well. So, okay, welcome to the gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. Let's kick it off by talking about what's charging in our driveways this week. Kyle, I understand you've had some adventures with your entire stable of EVs recently. Considering Colorado was hit by a big snow event last weekend, I'm betting that had something to do with what was going on there. So want to fill us in on your EV escapades?
Yeah, lots of cars in the driveway, sort of at the worst possible time, because we had at least 2.5 feet of snow, but closer to 3, maybe even over 3 when you total the snowfall before and after the big storm. Just completely shut down the foothills here where I live. I mean, we got dumped on so hard. And so I had the Volkswagen ID4, which was a stellar vehicle. Everyone's so shocked that I could like this car so much. And they're like, oh, you're being paid by Volkswagen. I'm like, that'd be nice. I'd be driving a Taycan if that was the case. just ID4, Tom and I both agree on this, I think, is just like not perfect, but it hits everything really well across the board. And it's really the first EV since Model 3 or Model Y that we've seen anything like that. You know, Chevy Bolt has good price point, good space, but then it charges at 55 kilowatts. And Mustang Mach-E is relatively expensive and then has a really bad charging curve and has some issues interfacing with Electrify America. And that kind of sucks. But the Volkswagen's just like good. There's nothing like really blatantly wrong with it that at least can't be fixed with the first version of software, which will be station routing to DC fast chargers. I think it just needs to tell a beginner driver, this is not a vehicle for someone who's EV savvy. I mean, it can be, I'm certainly loving it, but a lot of people who are going to buy this car have no idea how to road trip. The car needs to just hold your hand through the process, just like the Tesla Supercharger network does. And I've spoken to Volkswagen engineers about this. This is getting pushed to the car as soon as possible. Plug-in charge is also going to be coming towards the fall, which means this is just going to be by the end of the year, if what they say is correct, should be a really good road tripper. Just tons of adventures in this car. Honestly, it got snowed in for like 3 days, so I really only had 2 half days to play around with it. But I put 3 videos out on Out of Spec Reviews. I think we have articles on some of them already on Inside EVs, and they're super long, super in depth. And the 0 to 100% charging curve just went live this morning, which surprisingly is outperforming the other videos. Awesome. Just think it's so funny. So pretty neat. And just fun with other cars too. Lots of snow driving, and got the Tesla out on Nokian Hakkapeliittas. They just sent over Nokian Hakkapeliitta 10 EVs with the foam inside the tires and studded tires.
Oh, nice.
I'm super pumped about. So I'm going to get those mounted as soon as possible. And Timon actually took the Tesla, our videographer, up with his dad. They went on like a little ski trip this weekend. So they just left the house and ripped up the Tesla up into the mountains. So they're going to get some good photos of it. I3 is doing well on Blizzak snow tires. The smart car will get through just about anything, of course. And you can see just how much snow we had right there. It was crazy.
Wow. ID4, without giving away the whole video, you were really impressed with how it got to 50% pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. I mean, look, if people don't need to watch the video unless they're really nerdy.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
it's So basically, the ID4 follows a very Tesla-like curve that I've seen. And I really think Tesla knows a thing or two about DC fast charging. Now, look at the percentage of Tesla owners that DC fast charge versus percentage of any other EV owners that DC fast charge. They get tons of data. They know what's up. And so it'll basically pull from dead max speeds immediately, 126 kilowatts. And Tom did a, I think, 2% to 80 or 2% to 90. Did you go all the way to 100, Tom?
I did 2 to 90.
2 to 90, right. Okay. So, which was a great baseline because I was able to see if the results I was getting matched up with Tom's, and they were identical throughout the charging process.
Oh, that's good. We were wondering about that.
Yeah, so really consistent charging curve here. I also plugged in the ID4 just in other testing at 30%, at 20%, and it just follows the same curve. It doesn't do this Mustang Mach-E weird timer-based system. It's done right. So yeah, max speeds to 35% or so. And then it at by the time you get to 50 kilowatts, you're down to basically 100 or 50%. You're down to 50 kilowatts. 80% is 50 kilowatts, which is identical to Model 3 long range. 80 is 50. Really done well. Really smooth taper too. It doesn't fall off ledges. It doesn't do a Kona or Niro thing. You know, ledges don't exist in batteries. Like, there's no reason why a car should ever just poof, pop down, because you just want to keep the cells at max voltage. In order to do that, you just start backing off the current, and this happens progressively. So when you see a charging curve that drops 1 kilowatt, 1 kilowatt, 1 kilowatt, you know it's done well. When you see one that's doing 77 kilowatts and then it drops to 12, that's unacceptable. And it's not stressing the battery packs up to their maximum for the entire charging session. And some people may view that, but yeah.
You said something ahead about the ID4, which I didn't realize. There's no preconditioning. Well, there is preconditioning, but there's no specific, like in a Tesla or other cars, you can navigate to a supercharger and it'll start a process. But I didn't know that the ID4 kind of has it going on all the time.
Yeah, so this is going to require more testing, and I want to get OBD dongles and play around with it. But based off of reading every piece of technical material I could before this car was dropped off from the press office, basically everything says the battery pack, no matter if you're in eco mode, comfort, sport, just keeps it at 77 degrees Fahrenheit. And unlike Taycan, that needs to be at 85 degrees Fahrenheit to get 270 kilowatts. This is a lot less power. The battery doesn't need to be as warm. So there's no real need for the cars to ever basically preconditioned for DC charging, because their normal targeted run temperature can accept maximum charge rate. Now, how aggressively do they run the battery heater when you're driving? These are the things we're going to have to play around with and test out. But yeah, got to say that ID4, like, if you're just a person and you want a car, like, forget if you want an electric car or not, this is the vehicle. It's so happy. The thing is, and this is what people don't really understand, why I'm so pumped about it, and then I'll get off my horse here. Very excited about this car. It makes your day better. I really hate to say this, but when you drive a Leaf, when you drive a Bolt, they're good cars. They're very capable on paper. They don't improve your day. I don't smile driving a Leaf around. I get into an ID4, big smile on my face, really fun. I'm doing U-turns everywhere. I got the play and pause buttons on the pedals. It's a pleasant place, and it makes your day better. And that's really the overall metric of a car for me is, does it put a smile on my face? And the Volkswagen does, and most other EVs don't.
So even though the peak charge rate in terms of like stat wars and you know, people who kind of go to town with wanting like the biggest and best, so 125 kilowatts peak charge rate, which doesn't win any awards, you know, compared to its competition with the Ioniq and stuff coming out from Hyundai at the end of the year, but it holds that for such a long time that you rate like it doesn't need that 200 big number, that it's actually a very good experience.
Well, I would never turn down a bigger number. I'll take as much charging power as they'll let me. And I was actually talking to Volkswagen engineers months ago about this car, and they said, yeah, we could put 200 plus kilowatt charging in it. I'm like, well, do it. We want the power. But, you know, 125 kilowatts is probably the lowest livable charging speed today.
Yeah.
But it's not like it just hits 125 and falls. Like the Mustang Mach-E on paper says it charges faster. It does 150 kilowatts. In actuality, it does 165 or 167 kilowatts, surpassing its rated mark. But it only does this for such a short period of time. Then it drops to 110, and then it sits at 78, that the ID4 is probably a faster road tripper, even though most people who are reviewing the car, again, I haven't watched any reviews, but I imagine they're just looking at the press release and they say, oh, Mustang Mach-E charges at 160. This charges at 125. It must be slower. In actuality, it's not. And yeah, so definitely a very livable charging curve. Would I want to road trip this across the country all the time instead of a Taycan? No. But to get from here to LA, to get from, you know, here in Denver, you know, to wherever, then really good. And did Kyle just call me a nerd because he watched my video? Typically my videos are for nerds. So yes.
sorry, Rick. Speaking of the ID4, last week we mentioned that we were coming in on the boat, and this week we had a story up yesterday, I believe, that some owners have been receiving them, and so that's rolling out now. And so they could be showing up in your dealerships near you. So if you're interested, maybe call them up and see if you can get a test drive. I think that's what I'm going to do for sure as soon as my dealership has one. I already have a call into the sales guy there. And yeah, I'm definitely at least going to take a test drive, because if I don't buy one, which I can't afford to buy one of those, but my sister might. I don't know. We'll see.
Can I bring up this Volkswagen dealership thing for 1 second?
Sure, sure.
So I think the experience of someone buying this car is going to vary widely from dealer to dealer. Which was exciting is I had the first ID4 in Colorado. It literally got here, went to TFL for a few days, came straight to my house. So we had it within the first week that it arrived in the whole state, which is exciting. I brought it right over to the Volkswagen dealer because this is the measure of how they're going to sell in our area. Everyone stopped what they were doing, left their clients at their desks. All the service team came out and they're all like drooling over the ID4. If you go back on my Twitter, it's a few posts back, but you'll see the entire dealership huddled around this car, super excited about it. And I was taking people for rides and they're like so pumped. So yesterday they just got a black ID4 tester here in Fort Collins. And same thing, everyone's outside when I rolled up to see it. And that is the measure of a really good thing, because you know, it's a great product, but no one's going to buy it if you walk in and they say, "Ah, oh, we don't want to teach you how electric cars work. How about this really nice Tiguan?" And you know, that's what it comes down to. Tom knows this better than anyone. He trains dealers on this exact topic. So I was at least impressed with the level of excitement at my local dealer.
And I actually have an interesting story about my time with the ID4. I was, as Kyle mentioned, one of the things I do when I'm not writing for Inside of East is I work with dealerships on how to better understand and sell electric cars. So I visited a BMW dealership that we're currently working with, and I had taken the ID4 because I had it for that week, and that was the car I drive. And everybody came out like this at the BMW dealership to look at the ID4. They knew what it was. Which is surprising, because you know, in the past, as many of you have experienced when you've gone to dealerships to talk about electric vehicles, the sales staff very rarely knows anything about them. And you know, I cut them slack because, you know, up until now, with the ID4, with Ford getting the Mustang Mach-E, many of the EVs that the dealers had were pure compliance plays. They were retrofitted, you know, ICE platforms that the manufacturers made because they had to get something out there. They weren't ground up design that the manufacturers wanted to sell in volume. And now the ID4 that Volkswagen has, the Mustang Mach-E that Ford has, these are vehicles that the brand can get behind, the dealers can get behind. And I'm seeing that change already. I'm already seeing the dealers respond to these vehicles like, oh, that's great, I can't wait to get them, rather than, yeah, you know, Ford's sending us another 10 Fusion plugins, can you help us sell these things? We're getting the totally different approach now, where they're like, this thing is great, and they're excited about it. So there is hope that the dealership experience is going to improve over what we've seen in this past decade, because, you know, to be honest with you, I don't put all the blame on the dealers. Yeah, they should have done a better job in many instances. But many times, the manufacturers dumped these compliance cars on them, didn't give them any direction on how to sell them, on how batteries work, on how charging work. Was just kind of like, here you go, that's your job. Get rid of, you know, move these off the lot. You're going to get 5 a month because we have to sell them for compliance. Right. So it's not surprising they pushed them to the back of the lot buried them with other cars. They were never charged when people showed up to test drive them. But I'm hopeful, and I'm on the front lines of this, so I'm hopeful that experience is going to improve.
Because
what I've seen so far is that the dealerships are starting to embrace these cars, which is great.
Right. So what I think that comes down to is like product. Like manufacturers are finally making products that, you know, that are good, and they're not shy about, you know, running commercials or getting the word out. So that makes people kind of excited about it, and the people are learning about them more, and so they're going to dealers more. So that, you know, it just kind of all bubbles down from the top.
Yeah.
Product building excitement, and then you get a good dealership experience.
Yeah, there's a lot to do for dealers, right? If you're going to do it seriously, you've got to retrain your techs. You've got to have new lifting gear, because lifting an EV is different and dropping batteries out and service. So there's a difference between selling a compliance car, and there's like 600 odd VW dealers in the States. There's going to be good and bad on the spectrum, but it's not a cheap endeavor. In their defense.
Well, here's what's interesting about, you said, you know, something like 600 dealers. Ford only sells Mustang Mach-Es at EV certified dealers. That means middle of Wyoming, probably not going to have a Mach-E on the lot. Meanwhile, we did get this one out of the middle of Nebraska. Every Volkswagen dealer will sell ID4.
Good point.
Good.
Which is pretty, pretty neat.
So before I move on, I just want to encourage you to go to Kyle's Out of Spec Studios channel, YouTube channel, and check out his ID4 videos, because they're really good. And yeah, and you probably learn something. He's got a really good, what's that, walk? It's not really a walk around. It's like you check out all the details of the
nerdy tour for nerdy people.
Okay.
And yeah, it's, you know, it'll put you to sleep. I think we have an hour and a half of ID4 content that we have up there right now, plus another 30 minutes from earlier. So if you're interested in ID4, Tom has great charging videos.
It's true.
And a range test, which I talk about a lot in my videos. So watch his range test before you watch any of my stuff on Out of Spec Reviews, because then it'll all make sense.
Right
on. And then, yeah, if you see that picture of the Audi wagon on the right, that is how much snow we had. Truly insane.
Yeah, that looks like a lot of fun.
And it was a lot of fun, yeah.
I love snow driving. All right, so let's move on to the news of the week then, shall we? Okay, so last week we showed you a teaser, and today we can show you the actual photos of the new Kia EV6. Now, the car has yet to be given its actual full debut. That happens on March 30th, 10 a.m. Central European Time, which is 5 a.m. Eastern Time here in the U.S. and earlier, I guess, on the West Coast of the U.S. Yeah, so it seems like the release of these photos is as much about the design direction Kia is taking as it is about this particular model. Basically, this is summed up by the expression "opposites united." That's their kind of design philosophy, and that's, Kia says, is it's a design philosophy for all future vehicles. So this quote philosophy is held up by five pillars. I'll read them off here real quick for you. Bold for nature, joy for reason, power to progress, technology for life, and tension for serenity. Now, that's
very much... I'm sitting in a board meeting with marketing people, right? Like,
so that's,
come
that's,
on, that, stop
that's,
it.
That's Dominic, very much... you didn't even have to read that. Couldn't you just see that from the car? Like, right? What is just oozing? Those five pillars. As soon as I saw the car, that's what I thought of. So I mean, they nailed it right on. Yeah.
So I'm getting this. So that's very much designer talk. I think the technical term we used in art school is BS. But it is true that good design can come from having overarching themes and philosophies, but most people really don't care, or it's too abstract to connect with the physical translation. They just want to see the car, right? So then maybe wax poetic. So let's look at this thing. Of course, many will compare this to the Hyundai Ioniq 5 that just debuted, since there are two brands of the same company and they're both on the same eGMP platform, which is, you know, really awesome platform. But they are, as you can see, very different design-wise. So with the Kia EV6, I feel like everyone sees something different. I was looking at these images when they came out, and I was looking at the front three-quarter shot. And personally, I could see some like 1970-ish Peugeot DS with that falling roof line, and there's like a bit of overhang where it meets the rear glass. So, Tom, what do you see, and do you like it?
Well, the once you get back to the C pillar, I see Nissan Leaf personally. Oh, yeah. Right. And you know, I don't hate it. I kind of like the front, but I wish, I mean, for my taste at least, it was almost a really nice nose. Like, to me, I like the direction they were going in, but then I don't know, just something is missing. So, you know, this and the Hyundai Ioniq 5, you know, every day of the week I would pick the Ioniq 5, but I like the fact that there's another kind of version of this vehicle. I mentioned this, I think, last week in the podcast, because I think these vehicles are going to be such good vehicles. We should have them in different flavors, and my taste isn't someone else's taste. I don't love it, but I don't hate it.
Right. You know, Tom, you know what this is? This is like someone described a Polestar 2 over the telephone, and this is what they drew. And, you know, I don't think it looks that amazing either. But what I do like is the what's underneath of all that.
Yeah.
You know, technical stuff is going to be stellar. You know, I don't know if we talked about this. I ran into an Ioniq 5 at a prototype in Las Vegas, and I like looked around it and played around with it.
Really?
Yeah. So I was on, yeah, when I was on my road trip to Los Angeles in the Mustang Mach-E, I pull up to the Electrify America station to charge up at the Las Vegas South Premium Outlets, pull up, nice Taycan turbo on the right, Turbo S on the left, i3. I'm like, my people are here. We're all having a big chat. You know, like, it was great. And then what rolls up is this camoed out Ioniq that is, it's on my Twitter. You really got to go back, so you probably won't be able to find it that quickly. But this thing looked mega, really good. The wheels, super intricate. The charging, they couldn't get to work, sadly. The thing is, so Hyundai engineers apparently don't use an Electrify America app. They use the credit card, and the credit card readers were down. So the dude who was driving it worked for Roush Engineering. He's like, I guess I got to go to charge point now. And I'm like, well, I can just activate the charge for you and I'll log your charging stuff. So that was my whole plan. And they almost went for it. They were like, oh, really? I'm like, oh yeah, I'll just start it right here. No problem. You know, nice guy starting your charging session for free. Like, you don't even have to pay me back.
Right.
But they did not plug in there, unfortunately. But the car was big. Same size as Mustang Mach-E, nearly. Really good interior space. I was not allowed to sit in it, obviously, but right. I did get a really good look of everything going on in there. And the guy was like, yeah, I have to ask you to not take pictures, but at the end of the day, like, it's public space. So right. I was like, you know, phone, really cool guy, said it. Couldn't tell me how it drove, but I think he was enjoying it. So everything looks really positive for this car.
It's funny. I have a story on that. I was speaking to somebody who was involved in the Ioniq 5 program. And they asked me, did Kyle somehow get like a tip to know that we were there? Like, of all the people in the area, like, how did he roll up on us here and know that? And I was like, listen, Kyle drives hundreds of miles every day. He's going to come across everything everywhere. So no, he had no knowledge ahead of time. It was just pure luck. And they're like, okay, just wanted to check, because like, it kind of seemed weird that, you know, he knew where we were going to be.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I was pretty much done with my charging session. Then this rolls up. I'm like, well, I guess I'm not going anywhere anytime soon. And I just wanted to see the charging stuff. And that's what was really annoying, was they were not able to get it to charge. And so I talked to Electrify America about it, to be totally honest too. And just like, they were like, oh, well, it looks like our credit card readers were working. And I'm like, they weren't. I have a screenshot of the screen showing. So apparently they don't even know when their stuff's working or not, which I just find crazy. But, you know, definitely they deserve something there, because when you have an engineering vehicle from an automaker that is going to plan to use your network and they have problems charging, this is just it all over again. So let's hope it turns around. I'm sure it'll have plug-in charge. I'm sure it'll be fine. But just a very weird first charging experience. But look at how good those taillights look.
It's hard to tell under the camo, but they do. Yeah, they do look good in person.
Let me just interject really quickly. Something similar happened to me with the Taycan. And when Porsche was still pre-production testing the Taycan, they rolled up to my DC fast charge station in Montclair, Kyle, where Kyle actually has been. They were just doing charge testing. So I'm like freaking out because there's a Taycan in my parking lot, you know, and this was months before we even saw the production version. And I run out, I start taking pictures. And as soon as they see me, they unplugged it and just like took off like a bat out of hell out of the parking lot. They rolled into the wrong DC fast charge station.
Yeah, same they're with, like, well, same, did Tom know that they were coming? Guys. Like, he must have staged this somehow, right?
Yeah. So that was fun. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, it's interesting how they
Kia Go 6 on. Conversation.
It's covered in camo, and like we've seen the car, they've unveiled the. It's like the car is public now, but they still that draws more attention to it. Like if you see that, you're like, "Whoa, what's this?"
Yeah,
but yeah, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's up with running camo cars after the actual debut of the thing,
we've seen it. We've seen every angle of it. So
judging by the response here, we kind of like the Ioniq 5 more than the Kia EV6.
Martin,
we haven't heard from you exactly what you think of the EV6. Do you have some thoughts? I think you're trying to pull up a picture of it again.
I have proximity effects on this. So if I look at the Ioniq 5 and I'm like, this is amazing. I love it. I want one. I'm going to buy one. It's brilliant. Right. And then I look at the EV6 and go, oh, nice. Lower. I don't need a crossover. I definitely don't want an SUV. I like saloons. So this looks more like my style. I look at the EV6. This is brilliant. I'll have one of these. Fantastic. And I look at the Ioniq 5 and go, no, this is amazing. I want one of these. So I like both of them, which is a rubbish answer. It looks like, yeah, I think I prefer the inside of the Ioniq 5 more. Yeah. That's not, that is a bit of a slab of a steering wheel. But, you know, got to put the airbag somewhere, I guess. So it just looked, fantastic. I mean, we can't wait to see what's under the skin of both of these when we finally get to test them as well, because that's, you know, as much as I think they're nice looking cars, I don't know whether I'm going to get bored of the 80s styling of the Ioniq 5 quickly or not. It's super retro. But I love the little square lights, like Kyle says, and the LED stuff and the Matrix. It looks really cool. But it's really the tech specs of these, which I think is, once they're on the market, then they're going to be the new de facto comparison for anytime another EV comes out. We're going to be saying, well, it's nice, but doesn't charge this quickly or hasn't got plug sockets on and I can't plug when I'm camping, can't plug into it. So I think that's going to be the real piece de resistance of these cars.
Yeah.
When do you think we will get to the point? Sorry, Dominic. I'm just curious for Tom mainly. When do you think we'll get to the point where we won't have, we can have a good car and we just know the metrics are going to be okay? For example, some gas cars have terrible range. I'm looking at BMW M5s have no range because they have small fuel tanks and things like this. But we don't really care because it's an awesome car and you can still fill up anywhere. So when are we going to get to the point where it's like Mini Cooper SE is awesome? And it's just awesome. We don't have to worry about it charging because we just know everything will charge well.
I think that's a hodgepodge between the manufacturers. Each manufacturer is going to go at a different rate. And I don't think we're going to really get that until like 2030, where you absolutely know, okay, the car's launching and it's going to be good. You know, it's I think the different manufacturers are going to accelerate at different rates, Kyle. And I think by 2025, they're all going to realize, if they're not already all in this game, they have to get in immediately, and it's going to take 3 to 4 years to get that way. And that's why I'm saying the end of this decade.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? I mean, I'm curious, Martin, what do you think? When do you think, you know, we're going to have real, we almost don't have to check the stats. The cars are going to roll out and they're all going to have good range, charge well.
I mean, I don't think we're a long way away from, I agree 2030 when, you know, it's being taken seriously, but I don't think we're a long way now away from normal cars just being brilliant. Like, I think the ID4 and it's, you know, it's sister cars like the Skoda Enyaq, etc., are just really good. And they do that job. How much bigger of a battery do you want than 80 kilowatt hours? You know, at some point efficiency is going to get better, batteries are going to get hopefully smaller, like hopefully
smaller,
like,
and lighter, like, for the same like amount of energy,
like a 60, like a 40. I mean, brilliant.
Absolutely.
And so then I think the vanguard over the next 8 years is infrastructure and sorting out where people charge, and, you know, the amount of people that live in urban areas and where they fill up, and particularly in maybe Europe or you know, kind of the Asian countries where there's maybe it's not as much space in built up areas. And so where do people charge and how do cars fit into the lives? I don't think we're more than a couple of years away from just, you know, if you look at, oh, we're going to talk about the BMW and, you know, and what have you, but those kind of cars, I think this platform coming out from Hyundai is going to change a lot because, you know, you can just charge so quickly on it, and the range is going to be enough.
It ticks all the boxes. It's kind of like ID4, but maybe even one step up, where it just does everything well. There's no catch. At least that's what it seems like.
Yeah. Right, but where's Ford's, you know, GMP platform? Where's Fiat Chrysler's? Where you know, like
they're all going to have to buy
Mercedes.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think some of the companies are going to be able to deliver on that relatively quickly. But you know, I think Kyle's, when he threw that original question to me, was kind of like, when is every car just like, we don't have to worry from what brand we're buying it or whatever. I think we're real. Some of the manufacturers, VW, you know, Hyundai certainly seems like that now seems to be they're 5 years ahead of some of their competitors. We're still unsure. I'm personally still unsure about BMW. You know, let's see what these vehicles are. Let's see when the next, the iX, and then the next one comes out. They seem to be at the head of the pack also, but we have to get our hands on these vehicles.
No, you're right. Actually, the question was, when does every car coming out just is fine? And then we get into the next.
Yeah, I can buy the shortest range gas car now. I can buy like a Miata or whatever it is. But I know I can still drive it across the country without thinking about it. I just might have to stop more than someone in a diesel Suburban.
Yeah. And so if I'm a brand, if I want to go get a Subaru, or if I'm a Mazda fan or a Toyota fan,
that's,
I just
want
to
walk
into a dealership, then that is probably 6 to 8. Yeah, that's 6 to 8 years away.
Yeah, I think farther than that, to be honest, personally.
Yeah.
Right. Toyota, and right.
One of the person asked a good question. Leonard 65 asked, you know, 800 volt or 400 volt architecture? Is that, you know, what are we going to settle in? Is everybody going to be using an 800 or 900 volt architecture, do you think? Or is that still going to be selected by brands?
There's no reason not to go with a higher voltage architecture. The reason that 400 volts been around so far is because most tier one suppliers have a 600 volt rated package that they'll sell you, a charger that's rated up to 600 volts, whatever it is, cabling system. But now with everyone kind of upping the voltage, there's no downside. I think there's a downside above 1,000 volts. Because then you really need chargers to get up there. So like Lucid's going to have a DC to DC booster to over 1,000 volts for their cars. But I think 800 is just going to be the move. But again, it doesn't make or break a car. Rivian's going to be 400 volt. It's still going to charge fast, and it's going to be totally fine. At the end of the day, this voltage, system voltage and heat pumps, people spend a little bit too much time focusing on, when in reality it just depends on how the whole system's integrated.
Yes, you're so smart, Kyle. That's great. Awesome.
Still early in the morning. It'll decrease as the day goes on.
All right, so let's move on. Speaking of the of BMW i4, it also made its debut this week, and it also was a bit of a different sort of reveal as well. Instead of a special event, it was shown at the BMW Group annual conference on Wednesday. That seems a little low-key for a car that traces its lineage back to the BMW Next 100 concept from 2016. I don't know if you all recall that. It was kind of gold, had the fabric kind of skin on it. It then morphed into the BMW iVision Dynamics concept in, I believe, 2017. And this was a car that BMW said would become the i4, with a top speed of 120 miles an hour and a range of 373 miles. As you can see, the final production car is somewhat different from those. Actually, very traditional in many respects. It is, as you can see, a four-door Grand Coupe. It's very much like the 3 Series, I guess, or like the gas, what is it, four Grand Coupe, whatever.
Yeah, 430i is like the base gas version.
Thank you, Kyle. So apparently BMW is going to release more information about the car over the next few weeks, but they've already told us a few things about it already. There'll be some different versions. The most powerful will put out 573 horsepower and zoom up to 62 miles an hour from a standstill in about 4 seconds. That's plenty quick, I would say. The one with the longest range, they say, will go 300 miles on a charge, And that, those are EPA rated miles. I think WLTP is up there by their original number that they had thrown out, 373 kind of miles. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it lives up to that EPA range. BMW hasn't shown us the interior yet, but it should be centered around the new iDrive 8 infotainment system, which has a display on a big, has a big 14.9 inch screen and is complemented, you know, by a 12.3 inch digital gauge cluster in front of the driver. It's being built on the modular Claire platform. That's a CLAR platform. So it's not electric from the ground up. It does have a different floor assembly and like a rear structure in the back, and it should go on sale. I think I was reading August, but I'm not even sure if that's like public information yet. So Kyle, does this car do anything
for you? Well, it's public now that you said it. So yeah, does it do anything for me? Sadly, no. I want it to. I want to love this car because I'm a BMW fan, and not even just a BMW EV fan, even though I've owned three i3s. I'm a BMW like true motorsport enthusiast, early days. You know, my first car was a BMW group product. Like my first six cars came from this brand. And I just had the new 3 Series plug-in hybrid on loan and really loved that car. Actually was the first modern BMW I actually really, truly enjoyed. So I'm hoping this will be good. I don't like the way it looks. And again, I am not a judge of style. I wear sweatshirts every day. I don't know anything about looking good or what does look good. Obviously, I like the i3, so I know I'm wrong. So I guess if I think it's ugly, then it must look good. So who knows? But that grill, it's growing on me on the M3, but it's not growing on me on the M4, and it's certainly not growing on me here.
Okay.
And it just doesn't – like, I think it ruins the car for me personally.
You know, just to speak about this grill for the front end for a second, why is it that – like BMW, a European manufacturer, doesn't make a front end that incorporates the license plates y'all have over there properly? And they have like this thing plastered across like the key design element. Like, what's up with that?
Yeah, exactly. That's not an option over here. No. So they're on every car.
Right.
And they really should. I get the kidney grill style. I get it. I understand it. I understand that it was on their race cars in the 1920s or whatever. But that, you know, and it's fine. It's fine that it's there. It's fine that it's blanked off. It's just there for to look at. It's just a styling thing,
right?
It's fine that it incorporates the camera and the radar and all the driver assistance stuff. It's fine. I know people hate it because it's so big. It's not going anywhere on any BMW for the next bazillion years. So get used to it. It's staying. It's fine. Is it aero efficient? I don't know. Who cares? Look, this car, as Kyle says, this car, whether it's the rear wheel drive or whether it's the all wheel drive, M badged or whatever, has to drive amazingly. And it has to be such a driver's car. It's coming from that brand. They're late with it compared to the market. And it hasn't got to win the drag races, hasn't got to win 0-60. It's just got to drive brilliantly.
It's going to feel good, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a fantastic driver's car. It's a proper, like, I love it because I'm not on a downer against SUVs, but I just don't need one in my life or a crossover. It's a proper, you know, coupe that's going to look great style-wise and be a great driver's car, but it has to drive really well. So I hope it's, you know, bashing around test tracks 24/7 right now and in different conditions, because the engineers have got to nail this from day one.
You're absolutely right. You know, the thing that the Germans have always been amazing at, and the reason why they're worth the money, or at least have been, is they engineer the cars for things that people will never even dream of doing with them. Right? They jump them. They put them in mud. They do like everything possible. They shred it around the Nürburgring a million times. Guess what? I have to put my car in a boat to get it to the Nürburgring, right? So like, it's not possible. However, we buy them because it's like, wow, look at all the engineering. And there, when you drive a car that's really well engineered, you do get a sense of all of the man hours that have gone into it. I don't get that sense when I drive a Tesla. I never have, to be honest. When I get into a Porsche 911, when I get into a BMW 7 Series, an S-Class, even a Taycan, you get the sense that someone has spent a lot of time on this car, right? And so that's all this car needs to have. It needs to nix this rubber ball feel of newer modern BMWs. Again, excluding the 3 Series that I just had to go in, which was awesome. But it needs to drive well. Like Martin said, this is the only true metric of a BMW, and it's an intangible one. So it's going to be made fun of. No one's going to understand it on Twitter, but it's all about the intangibles here. Does the car turn in crisply? Does it oversteer? Every BMW needs to oversteer. It needs to drift. This is a metric that you're not going to be doing on the way to Starbucks, but it needs to do it. So we'll see.
So Tom, you have a long and special history with electric BMWs. So what are your thoughts on this i4?
So Martin and Kyle really kind of put together what I was going to say. So I don't need to repeat the whole thing. Right. But what I will say is one of the things that they have to do, and I'm going to repeat what the guy said, is nail it on the driving experience. It's not going to beat a Tesla P100D in a drag race. It doesn't have to. It has to be fast. It has to have a great driving experience. And it's one of the things that I think even the i3 for what it was, and Kyle Kyle's had 3 of them. I had 2 of them. Would tell you, you look at it, it's a little funky, weird looking car. You wouldn't expect it to have a good driving experience, but it really did. They really nailed it on it. Yeah, you couldn't shred it around the racetrack because of those skinny tires, but it just felt great when you drove. And I think that's what they have to hit this. As far as the outside appearance, I'm not in love with it. Kind of looks a little plain to me. That kidney grill, I don't want to keep beating on them, but I will tell you a little story I had when I was talking to the BMW dealership. They said they kind of just ignore it. It's like the Austin Powers movie with the mole. and it's like, you know, it's there and you want to say grill, but you won't because it's like an unspoken thing. They just, when customers ask about it, they just say, well, it's a bold statement, on the front of the car. That's the best we could say. Even the dealers don't love the grill, but it's there, as Martin said, it's not going away. So you almost feel like stop harping on it, but we had to at least mention it here. But the driving experience has to be great. And the interior, I'm sure, is going to be extremely comfortable. How good is the new iDrive going to be? How responsive is it going to be? Hopefully that's going to be a real important part of the driving experience, is how snappy and how quick the new iDrive that they put in this is, because as we all know, that software is becoming such a big part of the driving experience. It's no longer just, shredding it and oversteer and all the stuff. That how the software works and how it interfaces with the car is a huge part of the driving experience. And if this car nails it on the physical driving experience, but the software sucks, then you know what? It's not going to be a good driving experience overall. So hopefully BMW has been working hard on that. And the last thing I want to say is, the one thing that really disappoints me about this car is that it's coming out in 2022. I've been, as Kyle said, I've been a big BMW fan. I've been driving BMW electrics for 12 years now.
First BMW electric driver.
I have the distinction of being the very first customer worldwide that took possession of an electric BMW. And I have a little section in BMW's Welt because of that. There's some pictures of me with the car and everything. And that's, Martin just brought it up on the screen. It was called a BMW Active E. It was a converted 1 Series car that they converted to electric. And I took possession of that about 10 years ago. And, at the time, it really looked like BMW was going to be really on this electrification, that they were going to be the global leader. They were investing tons of money in Project I, which developed the i3, i8. More cars were going to follow like every couple of years. And then something happened around 2015-ish that just put everything on hold. And they said, okay, we're going to go one more product cycle of our core brand before we really kick into focus the EVs. Now, this i4, if it would have been coming out in, say, 2017, 2018, it would have been awesome. All eyes would have been on BMW. They dropped the ball when they made this decision, like I said, around 2014, 2015, to kick the can down the road for 4 or 5 years. They could have brought this to market, 4 or 5 years ago, and it's unfortunate they didn't. Does that mean they're too late and it's, they've fallen behind everybody? No. They can still, BMW is BMW. They can still pick it up. But let me tell you something. If this i4 doesn't deliver, if this has lackluster sales, if it's not a great driver's car, if it's not pretty efficient, if it doesn't charge well. Now, we know it has 150 kilowatt DC fast charging, but one thing that Kyle can tell you is that one of the great things about BMW Electric so far was that they hold the charge rate really long. They have a great charging curve. If this doesn't have a great charging curve, if it disappoints, then you know what? I think BMW is in trouble, period. Because this was 10 years in the making. So this better nail it as far as I'm concerned.
Totally agree.
Well, I think the iX is really more of the vehicle that BMW needs to hang their hat on as far as like their EV cred goes. It's got an all-electric platform from the ground up. It's not like on the BMW i4 car, modified platform. I just think the iX is, and it's even more bold stylistically speaking. It's got the huge kidney grills, which I kind of like on that vehicle personally. You know, don't throw things, but
yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. The iX has been here in Colorado testing for a little while. I've been trying to find it, but it's kind of not. It's on the other side of the state right now, and they're just driving around camo-less, just driving. I think they have two or three of them, and they're just cruising around. It's starting to grow on me in terms of styling. So yeah, we'll see how this goes.
Yes, yeah, nice chunky and solid looking thing, right?
Yeah. Martin, pull up that last comment that we just had, that Mike Calise had. He said that in 2015 to 17, they lost many of their key EV staff. I know a little bit about this, and they did. The BMW Project I, that was the I division that developed the i3 and i8, one at a time and sometimes in bulk, BMW lost many of their program managers. The whole top management of BMW I, that was their electric vehicle division, basically left. They're all over the place now. Henrik Wanders is in charge of electrification, I think, for Audi. Dr. Krantz works at Canoe now. He's one of the founders of Canoe. So they're all over the place, but they're all in electrification. And I've talked to many of them one-on-one privately over dinners and things like this around the world when I've been at press events. Because we retained that really good relationship from back in BMW's early EV days. And they've all told me that when they got the orders that BMW is going to be pulling back, that they, was in charge of Byton, the CEO of Byton, Carsten Breitfeld. Yes. When I was talking to Carsten, he was the father of the i8. And he told me when they were done with the i8, it was almost like, okay, so what's next for me? You know, the i8's done. It's going into production next year. And they're like, yeah, we're going to give you the next 7 series. And he said, I was like, I can't go back to that. You know, I just created the future. And now you want me to go back to that? And they're like, yeah, we're going to be pulling back a little bit on this. And he said, that was the defining moment that I realized I had to leave the brand. Wow. And other people told me the same thing. Henrik and said, you know what, we were totally committed to electrification, and when we realized that BMW was going to pull back, now we had to go. We had to leave. And these were top management at BMW. They have different levels of management. There's like, you know, A, B, C, whatever. They were at the highest level you could get, other than like board of director level. So they had made it. They had worked their way up the ladder in the industry. And they were at the pinnacle of management, and they just said, no, I can't do this anymore. I'm going somewhere else. Wow. So it shows me, that showed me their commitment, that they wanted to create this future. They weren't on cruise control in their career, which so many executives are when they get to that level. That's why I like to follow these guys where they go, because they have a passion for electrification. And Henrik's over at Audi now, and he's doing some good things over there.
Right on. That's quite a story there, man.
Well, that's really tough for a German to do. You have to keep in mind very much the German, I've worked for German automakers before. You stay with this company 30, 40, 50 years. Yep. I mean, look at Porsche engineers. They've been with the company since they were sweeping the floors, and then they worked their way up. And this is the culture of car companies. And for, like Tom said, for all of these guys who had just created the future of the top cars, for them to just leave is like the most unheard of thing in the culture, not even just the brands. It's really, truly exceptional that they did that.
Absolutely. And I remember talking to Henrik about it. We were having a beer in China somewhere because they brought me over there with Byton. And I told him, I said, you're nuts. You know, you were at the top, the pinnacle of this at BMW. You know, you're a young guy. You could just coast for the rest of your career. It's a fantastic, you know, package. And you left to join this startup that is probably going to go out of business. And they did. You know, I said, like, what are you thinking? And he said, Tom, I see what the future of mobility is, and I want to be a part of it. I don't want to go, I can't go back to gas cars anymore. Those are the executives you want in your company today.
Yes. All right. So
sorry to get so sidetracked.
No, it's great. That was great. So I really appreciate that. That was awesome. But let's move forward. And the next big thing on our list of stories is Tesla had its battery day a little while back, and now Volkswagen has held its power day. On Monday, the German automaker laid out its plans for batteries and EVs for the next few years. If you have a couple hours to spare, you can watch the entire presentation, but we'll try to hit some highlights here. So let's begin with the batteries, but start at the end, or end game, as it were. So Volkswagen sees solid-state batteries as the end game and hopes to have something viable, but probably only after 2025, and that would be via their partner, QuantumScape. It's a bit difficult to see how that folds into their battery program, but I guess first things first, produce a viable solid state cell, and then we'll talk, because they can work it in there, and they do that by having this unified cell theory, I want to say, but it's a concept. So starting in 2023, they want to follow a unified cell concept. That means they'll have for about 80% of their volume a single form factor. And the other important ingredient here is scale. So they want to make a lot of batteries. They want to make them in Europe, which is kind of interesting. They're talking about 640 gigawatt hour factories, putting out a total of 240 gigawatt hours in a year by 2030. So that sounds pretty ambitious. And I'm not sure anyone besides Tesla is discussing numbers that large right now. But for comparison, it's like we should mention Tesla aims to produce 3,000 terawatts by 2030. So that's like almost seven times as much. But Tesla will be putting some of that production into stationary storage in vehicles like the Semi that require a lot of batteries. So, yeah, that's just for comparison's sake. So getting back to VW, they want to use three different chemistries in their unified cells, at least at first. The entry-level cars will use iron phosphate batteries, or LFP. These are cheap and not so energy-dense, but VW thinks that they can reduce the cost of these cells by 50% of what they are today by 2030. That's not a hugely impressive number to me. I think GM is looking at the same kind of 50% production with more energy-dense cells, more advanced cells by 2025, but moving on. So for what they call mainstream vehicles, think like VW, ID4, et cetera, these will use a high manganese cell with lower nickel and no cobalt. So they'll be more affordable. And I think they want to get like a 30% cost reduction by 2030 on those. Then for specialty vehicles like the Porsche Taycan or the Audi e-tron GT, they'll use a nickel manganese cobalt, or NMC, which, there are many people using today. I think that's what they have in there now. On average, that will drive the cost of their battery systems to, they say, significantly below 100 euros per kilowatt hour. So that's an interesting mark. It's not bad. It's not super great either, though, I don't think, really, in comparison to what Tesla and others are doing. Like GM, I think he's even below that. But they also talked about charging during this presentation. I haven't had the chance to watch the entire part of that presentation, but in the short term, it did sound very promising for Europe, where they said they will multiply the number of public chargers by 5 over the next 4 years to hit 18,000 chargers. They also intend to have the largest network in the US, that's 3,500 Electrify America stations by the end of this year, and then 17,000 chargers in China by 2025. So that's already quite a bit there, Martin. So what do you think of this, like the battery part of the strategy?
Okay, so quickly, the battery part of the strategy I find fascinating because they're moving away from pouch cells. They're moving towards a prismatic cell, which if I just scroll up is like a big VHS tape size. this is going to have everything inside it, which is needed in terms of the battery management in the cell. So cell-to-car technology. So no longer putting cells into modules and then doing some electronics around the modules, making them into a battery pack and then some BMS on top of that. Everything that you need is inside one of these cells that they can scale it up and scale it down as they need. The cells are going to be made in six factories, which are going to be, this is just for Europe, six European factories. They're buying out Northvolt as part of their JV, a joint venture in Germany. A big 14 billion euro order going into Northvolt, which is in Sweden, formed from ex-Tesla execs. And then four more new gigafactories, roughly about 40 gigawatt hours each, being built around Europe. A bit of fuzziness around that in terms of what it means, whether that is VW's name above the door. They said they were looking for partners in terms of building these gigafactories. But that's roughly, you know, a new gigafactory every 1.5 years until the end of the decade. What's really impressive here is they have unified their battery technology to say, this is the road we're going down. Cell to car technology like BYD are doing, like with Tesla, get all the credit for it from their battery day. But others are doing it as well and have been. So moving to that and just having a scalable technology from the smallest vehicles to the biggest. Now, not quite the high performance stuff, because they reserve 20% of those batteries for, you know, the Taycans, the rest of the Porsche lineup, which is going to go electric, and that'll use, you know, high cobalt based batteries like we have at the moment. So for more performance, but for pretty much everything, for 80% of the cars the group are going to make, either the lithium ion phosphate batteries or the sort of slightly ones, the different ones they were talking about with manganese. But yeah, so just to focus on what's impressive, a clear strategy on batteries, a clear path to having enough batteries towards the end of the decade. And then I will say on batteries, I will say that it didn't really get reported, but I kind of found it interesting, is they've been using the South Koreans until now. So they've been using LG Chem and SK Innovation, right? And for the last, you know, couple of years plus, SK and LG have had this really bitter legal fight in the US, which resulted recently, it's around IP, in LG winning. So, of course, VW needed the SK Innovation cells for the ID4 from their Tennessee plant. Right. And the US legal system putting some restrictions on that. And VW then get told, you got to go find a new battery supplier. And I, you know, what I did in one of my quiet moments reflecting on this, realized that actually in all the announcements, VW said, we're talking about battery partnerships with CATL, A123, I think, is that a Chinese company?
Yes.
And making their own cells and cutting ties overnight with their existing battery suppliers. And I gather, I don't know, from a Reuters or a Bloomberg report I read, that LG and SK found out, if not that morning, then the day before. And that's a highly unusual way for the automotive industry to do business, because partnerships tend to be the name of the game, and going down, you know, 10, 20 year plans with partners. And so, yeah, it's a really big bit of news that is a bit, I don't know, insidery and nerdy and stuff, but it would have been a tough day for the South Korean cell makers. Look, they'll find more customers because everyone needs batteries, but it's a fundamental shift in how the group of VW are going out about their business. And I'm really excited about it, because it's long-term stuff, like 10, 15 year stuff, but it means that when you want to buy a really good car in 5 years, circling back to what we talked about, they'll just be great. They'll just be really, really, really good.
I think this opens up a huge opportunity for Hyundai and maybe even GM, actually, with having that all of a sudden. So LG, as you said, I'm like much stumbling over here. Overnight, they have all this capacity. They have, I mean, they've been working on building the supply chain for how long? They have, you know, mineral contracts. And so they're going to have, but, you know, Hyundai has this EGMP platform that I think is going to be hugely popular, more popular maybe and more successful than they even know at this point. And now there's all this new battery, you know, supply chain open to them again. And I think it's going to work out. I don't think they really need to lose any sleep over it. And it also may be opened up for GM too, because GM and LG are also partners.
Yeah, all their factories are built around pouch cells. Not that you can't re-engineer a factory, but it's costly. So in terms of the fundamental way that VW are going to go about business with batteries, it didn't suit them. So that's why But yeah, I just wonder how much of it was self-inflicted, like how much of it was a boardroom decision a year ago where they would have said to LG and SK, look, just stop infighting between you because you're going to cost us a battery for our ID4 in the US. And it did. And I think VW were like, we're out. That's it. We're out. You guys crack on between you.
Right. Yeah, I definitely think that that was part of it, Martin, that they looked at this and said, look, the battery is so fundamental to our future. We can't allow other companies to cripple us because of their mistakes. And I think that's the right position to take. I'm surprised other manufacturers aren't realizing that it's so fundamental to the future of their entire company that, you know, I know it's a, you know, the global industry and suppliers, you get parts from all over the place, but the battery supply, I think, is something that they have to take a strong look at differently than, say, you know, other components in the vehicle. Now, I know you need every single part to build a car, but, you know, manufacturers have to look at batteries a little bit different and try to have greater control over that supply moving forward. They really have to.
This is where manufacturers can really create their own new version of engines. Look, BMW is an engine company. That's how they founded their company. Now they're going to go out and buy batteries and buy motors from someone else, right? So that sucks for their core engineers. It's like, how can they stoop down to that level almost? Volkswagen, same thing. Right. They've been building their own engines. They make some of the best engines in Porsche. They need to make their own future with a battery pack that fits their cars. Sorry, Ellie is very excited about this. All right. That was the gauntlet. Dominic, go on. Sorry.
All right. So so this battery strategy is going to be combined with a single electric vehicle platform strategy as well. So developing under the program called Project Trinity and based on the MEB and PPE platform architecture, Volkswagen is developing the Scalable Systems Platform, or SSP. Volkswagen calls the SSP architecture fully digital and highly scalable. So by 2024 or 25, we should see SSP with unified cells in a cell-to-vehicle construction, which is, I guess, is one step beyond, I guess, cell to pack. This platform will also incorporate the Volkswagen Operating System 2.0. This will be mostly in-house software. Right now, Volkswagen only develops about 10% of its software in-house. But this new iteration of the VWOS will be about 60% in-house. So they're working on moving that, you know, more in-house. I'm not sure if anyone has anything they'd like to add before we move on to this part.
I just want to say, from the story or just this part?
Just like the platform say.
All right, carry on.
Okay. So I wanted to jump back to the batteries for a second. Martin, you were talking about this earlier. So Northvolt, which is a battery maker in Sweden, as you said, started with some ex-Tesla folks and a Volkswagen partner in all of this, were just given a $14 billion order. They have a plant under construction. They have a couple, actually. They have this one plant under construction, which is going to be the one of Volkswagen's 40 gigawatt hour factories, and they'll make these specialty NMC batteries there. While that's impressive and shows that VW is putting its money where it's saying it is, it's also interesting that Northvolt just acquired a company itself, and that's called Qberg, and it was spun out of Stanford University, and they're developing an energy dense high-performance battery that uses a lithium metal anode. If you remember last week, we mentioned that General Motors is also developing cells with a similar chemistry with its partner, Solid Energy Systems. So it could be interesting to see how those two efforts work out time-wise, and then again, how Volkswagen integrates like this new chemistry into their unified cells for their specialty vehicles. And also, the competition between is like this metal anode thing, lithium metal anode technology, and the solid state batteries. Like, it seemed like two very similar kind of energy dense wise competing chemistries. So that's going to be interesting to watch that play out. So did I hit what you wanted to mention there, Martin?
All I was going to mention is like just finally was a bit of a shift in terms of how the companies are going about their business. So Tesla obviously had their battery day last year, which is very much a you know, an energy company, but will put solar panels on your roof, wants to sell you a battery for your home. And when it was asked about vehicle to grid in the Q&A session at the end, Elon, in typical style, just dismissed it and said, no, vehicle to grid doesn't work. We're not going to, Tesla will never do vehicle to grid. You know, what if there's a power outage and, you know, the engineer comes to fix it at the end of your road and your car is putting electricity back onto the grid, it's going to kill them. And just poo-pooed the whole idea. And right. Of course, all of those are difficult problems, but can sure. be solved and have yes. been solved. So whereas VW, a complete 180 on that. They want their company to be their cars they're making to be part of an energy future. Spent a long time this week talking about the MEB platform will be vehicle to grid enabled from next year. So MEB cars coming out from 2022 onwards, much like the Hyundai, much like Lucid, will be designed for bi-directional power. And they really have a strong focus on how the energy store in your driveway will be part of an efficient, healthy grid around the world. So rather than building these grid systems that have to cope with a peak that's often only 1 or 2 hours a day, or when everyone puts their heating or air conditioning on, you know, depending on where you live, actually smoothing out that flow, charging overnight when it's cheap and there's renewables and feeding back into the grid. And that is a strategy which was at the core of everything they talked about, along with recycling and things like that as well, which is similar but very different to Tesla. Tesla will sell you a battery for your home, and these days they won't sell you one without solar. They've removed the Powerwall as a standalone product. So they want to be part of your home energy as well, but in a different way. And I thought it was really interesting because other car companies simply are not talking about this kind of stuff. They're still, we've talked about BMW, and it's about not about being ahead or behind. They're just not talking in those kind of terms. And I found it fascinating and interesting and how what a car company looks like in 10 years' time. It's going to be really different to today.
Right. That's going to be very interesting, the European approach to the North American, like more Tesla approach, because we have our utilities. All that vehicle to grid requires a lot of coordination with utilities, and that's like herding cats over here in the U.S. We have, you know, tons, and we don't have I want to say we don't have a unified structure, but we do have a federal government, right? But they don't really, you know, the states have a lot more leeway in how things, you know, are decided with utilities, I think. And I'm not sure exactly how that works in the EU, but I just feel like maybe they can get it together a bit more over there.
Yeah, we're in terms of here in the UK, there's one company called National Grid, and that's simple to sort out.
Yeah.
With a few different providers, like on a more local level, but and then definitely within Europe, in terms of the interconnects between Europe, there's a lot of swapping of energy, you know, with big kind of sea cables and stuff, undersea cables. So it's a very joined up system, and it works pretty well. And we're probably slightly further ahead in terms of renewables. Germany is, you know, the UK is sure. the windiest country in Europe. So we've gone really big for offshore wind as well. So there's been a lot of that investment over the last 20 years. And in terms of how it fits in with the cars that we love to drive. You know, I might be a great distance, but all of the Texas news certainly made the international news over here. And that was heartbreaking to see people without power when in only a few years' time, there'll be a lot more EVs on the road. And that's a lot of energy stored sitting in your driveway. Yeah. And VW are thinking, how do we use that? Not just in emergencies, but in a day-to-day way that is practical. It doesn't require you to constantly be looking at an app. It just works seamlessly in the background. And that's a big thing for a car company to commit to.
Yeah, I really like that idea. And I really wish them success there. And it's just going to be something to keep an eye on for sure. So let's see. I wanted to get right back to a U.S. automaker-to-be. Rivian has just made a couple of announcements this week. And for one thing, production is still on track for June for the R1T electric pickup truck. So that's very exciting because it's really awesome. And they've started something called the Rivian Guides Program. So each Rivian owner is going to be assigned a guide, and they'll have their email and a phone number to ask, you know, questions or address issues that might arise or whatever. So that's really great. I think Tesla had a similar sort of thing going on. I don't know if it was a name program, but you had someone assigned to you, and that's kind of gone away. And this hope Rivian can keep their customer service up, because that's, you know, that's a great differentiator. But that's not even the biggest thing of the week, really. I think the bigger news from Rivian is that they've released more info about their charging network. So this is kind of interesting. I'll just hit the high points real quick, because we're close on time. So it's going to be the high-speed fast charging, the DC fast charging network is going to be exclusively for Rivian owners. 3,500 DC fast chargers at 600, over 600 sites by the end of 2023. That's not so far off. And up to 140 miles of range in 20 or 30 minutes for R1T and R1S. I believe that's a peak of 200 kilowatts to begin with, but eventually they'll be going up over 300 kilowatts for peaks. Automatic charging, like Tesla, pull in, pull up, plug in, and you know you're set. In-vehicle navigation automatically plans your charging for you, just very Tesla-like as well. See, it's powered by 100% renewable energy. That's a big promise. And through partnerships with electric providers, they say we will use wind and solar wherever possible, as well as renewable energy certificates to ensure your vehicle is powered with clean electricity. Besides DC fast chargers, by the end of 2023, Rivian will install more than 10,000 Rivian waypoints, charging points. So these are going to be AC charging points, level 2, 11.5 kilowatts capable, and over 10,000 chargers planned by the end of 2023. So that's not so far off either. That's a ton of, you know, lower speed charging, but still pretty practical for a lot of people. And those will be open to the general public, every automaker. And you'll find them at shops and restaurants, hotels and parks and more. Automatic charging for Rivian drivers, again, just pull up and plug in, and open to the public using the J1772 plugs. Yes, and those also will be, you know, located in monitor charge status, and you'll get notifications through your in-vehicle navigation and Rivian app. So real quickly, Tom, what'd you think of this?
Where to begin? More motes, as Martin would say. You know, I don't like it. I don't like these proprietary networks. I know Porsche is working on something now. I know in Europe, I don't know if they're going to be bringing that also to the U.S., where they're going to be putting in DC fast chargers that only their customers can use. You know, hey, listen, I understand it's your money. You're investing in it. But the last thing we need is 10 different networks out there from 10 different companies that only their companies can use. And I mean, it sounds great. Think about 3,500 chargers, 3,500 DC fast chargers by the end of 2023. I'll tell you right now, that's not happening. less than 2 years, they're going to install. Electrify America doesn't even have that many charging stations yet. They might have learned from Electrify America's, say, early on mistakes, but that's an incredible, that's like more than 40 a week that have to start installing tomorrow right through the end of that year. And it's just the permitting that's required and everything. I think they're going to realize it's going to end up being a little harder than what they want, but that's okay. They don't have to hit 3,500 by the end of 2023. I don't like this concept. I'm sorry. I don't like the fact that it's a closed network just for Rivian customers. I just, you know what, offer it to your customers for free. And if somebody else wants to use it, charge them a premium, you know, even if they make it prohibitive that I wouldn't want to charge there because it's too expensive, charge 50 cents a kilowatt hour, something like that. But yeah, don't wall them off that they cannot be used. If I pull up there and I really need to charge one day, you know what? If I have to spend $45, $50 to charge my car, I'll do it because I need it, you know, but don't make it so that, you know, if this is mine, you know, Bugs Bunny running away with the genie in the bottle lamp, you know, for crying out loud, that's not advancing, you know, the goal that we want to get to, in my opinion.
Right.
So I have thoughts about this. I will make them quick. If I was Rivian, I would do the same thing. I would do it just like this because, look, I want a reason for people to buy my vehicles, and I don't want them to pull up with some dude in a Lucid charging on my charger when I got to go adventuring in the Rivian I just bought on this network. So I totally understand why this is the case. I agree with Tom that a solution might be to charge it at $1 a kilowatt hour, 75 cents a kilowatt, whatever it is, just in case you happen to be stranded there and you can't go to any other station. At least, you know, that physical connection can charge a car, but make it so that they're actually, you know, just pricing it way out. But personally, this is all the more reason for me to buy a Rivian. Look at all the chargers selfishly in Colorado, all up and down by my house. This is where I keep complaining, right? That EVs are not ready yet because I want to go up in the mountains. People come here from all over the world to go adventuring. We are at the gates of some of the best trails, ATV riding, off-road riding. And, you know, the thing is, this solves my problem. Right. So that just is all the more reason for me to buy a Rivian. And by the way, if I do buy a Rivian and I don't get clogged up at a charger selfishly, I'm happier that way too. I don't want to have to wait for 10 people in front of me to charge in a Nissan Leaf or whatever they're going to be pulling up in an Aria with CCS. So I get the let's share around and everything's good. Well, guess what? Our government is not forcing anything like that to happen. And so that brings the free market approach, and that's where you benefit yourself. And, you know, same thing like Tesla right here with Rivian. If it's going to happen, it's just all the more reason to buy the Rivian in the first place.
Yeah, the locations are going to be key to this, too. I believe, like Rivian said, they want to have, you know, their chargers in places where, you know, Electrified America is not going to, you know, put chargers at, like, adventure destinations, you know, specifically for their customers. Yeah, so
right. And that's one of the reasons why I think that they should open it up, because you're not going to have 10 Leafs pull up there and block Kyle from plugging in.
True.
You know, most of the vehicles are going to be these adventure type vehicles, but you know, on the odd chance that a crazy person like Kyle drives his smart ED off road, you know, 10 miles through rivers and everything, you know, let the guy plug in and charge him for it, make him pay. Sure. And make them pay double what it cost on, say, Electrify America. But don't just wall it off. You know, mine, get away from me. You know, I never really loved that with Tesla, but I understood where Tesla was coming from, because at the time when they launched, nobody was doing this. And, you know, it almost was the right philosophy back then. I mean, could they figure out a way of opening it up now and charging people? I think that ought to be something. And it sounds like that they are considering that. But, you know, for Rivian to launch now and, you know, at the where we are at this stage of the game and say, you know, this is our proprietary network, you stay away from it, you know, others aren't welcome. I think there's a way that they could make it work to keep their customers happy, to make it that perk that Kyle wants, that this is my advantage of buying Rivian, I get to use these, but also not have it just completely locked down. That's my
point. I think they will open it up in the future, but I think this is the best move to drive reservations and orders for their vehicles right now as a business decision. Because I look at this and I'm going to say, okay, I'm in between I don't know what else would be there, a Lordstown. What other pickup truck is adventure-y? I don't know. Or a Rivian, or, you know, who knows, whatever, a Lucid, whatever Gravity SUV is, right? So I'm going to say, all right, well, guess what? I live here in Colorado. So do tons of other people. If I want to get around my state, looks like I got to buy a Rivian. And then I'll buy it. And whatever, you know, someone will buy it and then you can get around. And in a year or 2 years, and then they realize that their utilization rates on the trails are less than 1% of the time, maybe then they'll open it up to more people, because they will certainly have the capability to do so. I guarantee you it'll just be software locked to start.
Well, I think we should get a hold of RJ Scringe from Rivian and put these questions to him and just see, you know, how he defends, you know, decisions and that, you know.
Absolutely. He's been begging to come on the podcast. We keep turning him down.
Well, look, we're a couple of weeks away from our 1 year anniversary, show 52, oh, whatever. True, so right? RJ can come on and celebrate with us for our 1 year.
Oh, that'd be awesome. You hear that, RJ? Come on.
All right. We'll let you on.
All right. So yeah, we're well up to our time limit here, but I just wanted to mention, like last week we talked about the Toyota X Prologue or something, T's being like an electric vehicle. No, forget that. That was kind of wrong. Everyone got that wrong, except I think one guy on YouTube did get it right. And I'm not sure if I mentioned that last week or not, but they did actually this week tease a new battery electric SUV. Toyota did. So yeah, they're kind of in the game. I don't know. We'll see. Right. So that brings us to the end of our show. Oh, by the way, we were just talking about electric pickup trucks there. If you want to hear more about electric pickup trucks, our sister website, MotorOne.com, has a podcast themselves. And Tom here was a guest on it. And I believe that's probably gone live already this morning. So if you go over to the Motor One YouTube channel, you can check that out and hear more about electric pickup trucks from different perspectives, Tom's perspective and then the traditional automotive guy's perspective. So that'd be great. And I'm going to check that out myself. So that brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section, of course, and on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread, where we have all our episodes listed. So don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom Malogny is at Tomalog. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at Out of Spec, and I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon down there for notifications. We'll see you all again next week. Ciao.